The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show EDU edition today, where we're going to dive a little bit deeper than normal into a singular topic rather than the Q&A show that you might be familiar with, where we handle a variety of questions on any given show. But today we've got a kind of a tax-driven topic that is the result of an email that we got. So this did come in from a listener. And because it was tax-related, Jim's a little busy right now, so we decided to have Bob Palachek on, who's in the office. He's been on the show before, but he's the CPA in the office that gives us a hand with our tax-related topics, if you will, helps us with some of the tax projections and tax analysis that we do, that we talk about pretty regularly on the show here. So welcome, Bob. Thanks for stepping in.
Thanks, Chris.
For Jim today.
I was going to say good morning, but we're about lunchtime, I think.
Oh, it's close. Well, I think we have 2 minutes left.
All right.
It's still morning. So the one thing I'll warn people, it'll probably be a shorter show today since Jim's not around. We don't, between Bob and I, we don't have nearly as many words to get out of our system than Jim usually does. But we'll see. Sometimes I've said that in the past, and it actually lingered on for quite a long time. So let me start to add some context for everyone with the email that we received and why we decided to talk about 1099s today. So people have heard about those, but here's the question. Came in just recently here, February 10th, actually, from a listener in New Hampshire. And the question, I have a question about tax forms related to converting after-tax 401k dollars into Roth IRA or traditional IRA dollars. I believe this is often called the mega backdoor Roth conversion. That is a slang term, just as an aside here, for the process of converting oftentimes large amounts of money from after-tax 401k dollars out into a Roth IRA. That step, if done properly, since they were already after-tax non-deductible contributions to the 401k, if done properly, will end up over into the Roth IRA nice and cleanly without any additional tax consequences. So that's what this person's talking about with the mega backdoor Roth. To continue with their email, in years prior to 2019, my 401k, traditional IRA, and Roth IRA accounts were all with one custodian, Vanguard in this case, we can mention that. When I completed the aforementioned conversion in years prior to 2019, I received a 1099-R form, or R, if the way Jim would say it, form from this single custodian where all these accounts were held, indicating this activity. This year, my company 401k was transitioned to another custodian, Prudential, but having no reason to change, my IRA accounts remain at the original custodian, Vanguard. When I performed this type of conversion in 2019, after-tax 401k contributions converted to Roth and related after-tax 401k gains converted to traditional, that's a topic for another show. That has to do with the mega backdoor they're doing. It went from the new 401k custodian straight to the custodian where my IRAs are still held. This was a direct transfer. I never personally saw a check or touched the money. Based on this action alone, should I expect a 1099-R or any other tax form from either custodian or even something from both? I'm asking because I've received no such form from either, and no such forms are present online in my accounts at either custodian, although it's past the date they indicate such forms would be available. If I used to get a 1099-R when it was a transaction within a single custodian, why would I not get one when it's between two custodians? And that's the end of their question. They sign it George from New Hampshire. So it's an excellent question. the simple answer, at least straight up, is they should get one. But before we do that, Bob, why don't you share with us a little more about what 1099s are and why a person might get them for a variety of reasons?
Sure. So 1099s basically form a series of information returns that the IRS, puts it upon the payers or the reporting party to provide this information to the taxpayer each year. And it does convey information to the taxpayer to help them with their returns as far as, you know, the amount of money they receive from various sources and the type of income received. And, of course, it also gets the IRS the ability to track that information and match it within right. their system to your return. And so that's the reason why it's out there. And there's a lot of different forms, and they try to make them with letters to try to connect it to what it is to make it a little easier for everybody. When they open up the envelope, you can kind of know, you know, the common ones we're used to seeing are the DIV forms for dividends. You have INT, interest from banks, CDs. And sometimes these are combined into consolidated 1099s. So if you have an account at, you know, a broker, Edward Jones or Fidelity, they're going to give you a 1099 that's consolidated because it's going to report dividends, interest, and sales, and OID, and everything else that's going to be reportable.
Got it. So a lot of people get that 1099 INT, so the interest from bank savings or CDs on there, the DIV. The R in this case, we'll get to eventually. There's also, for those of you retired collecting Social Security, the 1099 SSA is how the Social Security Administration reports your Social Security benefits that may or may not be taxable, but that's how the official reporting goes. And these 1099s, a copy goes to the IRS and a copy goes to you as well. So it's not just upon you to report it. It's been reported to the IRS. They're going to be looking for you to divulge this information on your tax returns as well and matching it up. But they use this 1099 number for all these different, there's similar instances reporting this activity, but they append it, like Bob said, with that INT, SSA, DIV, MISC, M-I-S-C, right? Miscellaneous.
M-I-S-C, which is a big one for contractor, independent contractor payments. There's payments in medical payments. Payments to your attorneys are reported that way. And different 1099s have different thresholds. So, for example, the MISC, the M-I-S-C, is a $600 threshold typically for independent contractors, where if they were to receive, you know, $400 during the year, it can be reported, but it doesn't have to be.
Right. So the party paying that $400 didn't have to issue a 1099. They only have to issue it if it's over $600. What people always forget, maybe on purpose, that even though you don't get the 1099, that doesn't mean you weren't supposed to report the income. A lot of people think that, oh, I didn't get the 1099. It was under $600, so I can just pretend this didn't happen. That's technically not true. But the IRS isn't going to get a 1099 for it unless the paying party decided to do that. So I guess that brings us to the 1099-R specifically, which is what they're talking about here. What gets reported on the 1099-R?
So the 1099-R, and R is a nice letter because I think it's it connects to retirement. Mm-hmm. At least that's in my mind, and I think that's what they were thinking too. And so we're talking about reporting distributions from annuities, profit-sharing plans, retirement plans, IRAs, pensions, and insurance contracts, and I believe charitable gift annuities as well. So it encompasses quite a bit of information coming out of those plans. It can be cash distributions, which, you know, people know they get a check in the mail or they cash out a plan. There's also some non-cash things that occur that trigger a 1099-R reporting, and we'll get into those too. The dollar threshold for 1099-Rs, we talked about it, was $600 for the MISCs and some other forms. For the Rs, it's $10. So it's so very low threshold.
I didn't even know there was a threshold on that.
$10.
That's pretty low.
Yeah, exactly. So it'd be pretty hard to imagine. Well, yeah. A $5 one, I guess.
Right. If you have any of this activity, most likely you're going to get
this
form.
See it.
So.
Exactly.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's a tidbit. Yeah.
And you'll probably never see one issued jointly. 1099-R is going to come in an individual's name. You may see a beneficiary name if it's an inherited IRA, I think, on there. But it's only primarily going to point to one person because all of these plans can only be owned individually. If you have an annuity contract with joint owners, it'll be the primary owner that they will issue the 1099-R in.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Didn't know that either. I'm writing these notes down. I'm learning stuff myself on the CDU show.
So this is all good stuff.
Yeah.
If you receive one and it is correct, and we'll talk about a few things you can do if it's not correct, you must report it on your tax return. It does not mean that it'll be taxable. That just depends on a lot of circumstances, but it doesn't necessarily mean if you open it up and you see an amount on there and you just did a rollover and they told you it wasn't going to be taxable, don't panic, because depending on the code that's on the form, that will tell you and your tax return software or your tax repair if it's taxable or not. Mm-hmm. But if you do get one, you do need to put it on your return.
Got it.
Otherwise, IRS will send you a letter looking for
it. So this is one of the easy, we don't talk about audits too much, but those letter audits come out. The computer can detect when the IRS has received one of these forms, but you didn't make any mention of it from your end. And that is something easy for the computer to spit out, so you're almost guaranteed to eventually. Usually doesn't happen for a while. I'm not sure. I think they're still using those super slow computers because those letter audits can be a couple years or so before they come out. But almost for sure when there's that kind of mismatch, unless it's a tiny dollar amount, I don't know. Maybe they have an internal threshold where they don't mail you a letter if it's small. Because I think I've had some little tiny things happen, and after the fact, I'm like, oh, my gosh, I forgot to put that on there, but it's so small, and then I never heard, but I might be just dreaming. But are you aware of don't they send it out even if it's only a couple bucks?
I've seen them come out for small amounts. Huh. Other ones, I think, do get missed. You know, it's hard to really know. I've seen transpositions like a $73 versus a $37, and that generated a $10 bill or something. So it can be kicked out for small amounts sometimes.
Okay, but that is a way that really increases the chances that it's going to trigger one of these letters to come out. So make sure that any 1099s or W-2s, for that matter, all that stuff, that copies of it go to the IRS, you better be reporting it on your return or they're going to think something strange.
Exactly. And some people wonder, they're used to getting them every year, and then 1 year they don't see one, and so they call, and I guess the number one reason is they just didn't take any money that year. They skipped a year or something changed. So sometimes, start there first. If I didn't get one, well, did you take a distribution this year, or did you defer it a year? So that's one of the more common reasons for people wondering about them getting one or not getting one, and that's the reason. Other times you can get two in the same year from the same account.
And that
at first looks kind of odd because it's the same account, same payer, same payee. Everything looks the same, could be different amounts. And there's some reasons for that. And one of the bigger reasons is you've moved. So you were living in one state in the beginning of the year. You had a distribution from your pension or from your traditional IRA account. And then during the year, you move to another state, and then you take another distribution out. They will report those separately on 1099s because they want to report the state that you're residing in when you took the distribution.
Interesting.
Another case is the age 59 and a half. So that's the magic age where from a traditional plan, IRA, or qualified plan, you're allowed to take a distribution and avoid the 10% penalty. So you're subject to tax, typically, but not subject to the 10% early withdrawal penalty. And it's 59 and a half, and it's not 59 and a half in the year that you turn 59 and a half, it's the exact 59 and a half date. So if you were to take a distribution at 59 years and 150 days old, that's going to subject you to the 10% penalty.
So you got a separate 1099 for that and maybe a second one for that same year that you were over 59 and a half. Is that what you're saying? You could, that's what could generate two of them.
That's correct. So
yeah, I hadn't thought about that scenario. That's interesting.
At 59 and 190 days, mm-hmm. you take another, $10,000 or whatever amount it is out of your account. Now that's going to come out not subject to a 10% early withdrawal penalty. You're going to get a 1099 for each, and they're going to be a different code on each one. So that lets the IRS and the tax preparer know that one's going to be subject to that penalty and one's not. And that kind of leads to the other example of receiving multiple ones from the same year or other distribution code differences. An example would be, and I just saw this recently, somebody left their employer and they just cashed out their 401k. And they also had a loan outstanding. And they didn't pay back the loan when they left. So that loan that's not repaid back is a deemed distribution from the 401k with one particular code. And then just cashing out early, in this case, they cashed out early, is another code. So they had 1099R for their cash out and 1099R for their loan balance that they did not repay.
Yeah, so I guess the point is just because you get one and you shove it in your tax folder, that's what I usually do is I'm collecting all these documents. I've got a file folder for that tax year, and I start, as they start showing up in the mail or email, I always print them off because I'm a paper person, and throw them in that folder. And I guess I'd throw the 1099 in there and then saw another one from the same place. I might be tempted to throw it away thinking it was a duplicate or something when it, in fact, could be a second one for that same account that has a different code on it, depending on some of the things that you just mentioned. So that's I hadn't really thought of that. So
yeah, that's a good point. And they do look, I mean, except for a dollar amount in one box, almost they would look identical.
Yeah, yeah, and, interesting.
So, and that would catch, it would get, you know, it would catch up.
Yep. So that's a lot of reasons you'd get more than one. Do you have more on that, or are we to the point where we want to describe why this person didn't get one, which is the opposite? Instead of getting multiples, you don't even get one at all.
Yeah, but we can talk about that. And then, I had some more information. So however, do you want to go back to the question? Back to the question.
Okay. Well, that just as a reminder, this per, just a summary, they are used to getting 1099-Rs back when they had their 401k and IRA at the same custodian when they were doing mega backdoor Roth conversions. These were transfers from the 401k into their Roth IRA, and they'd get a 1099 reporting that activity, which is what these 1099-Rs are intended to describe. One of the things that they will describe is these kinds of transfers between these accounts. But then they moved their 401k, at least their company did, they moved their 401k over to Prudential from Vanguard. And suddenly this year, we're in 2020 as we record this, but they're talking about for the tax year 2019, when they did another one of these transfers or conversions, they didn't get a 1099 from Prudential, who's holding their new 401k. And they were wondering if it's because now they're at two separate places and why there would be a difference. Should they have gotten one?
It's my understanding is they should have. And especially in whether it's one custodian or multiple custodians, I don't think that makes a difference. But I think when you transfer funds between different investment types or different contracts, 401k being one type, a traditional IRA being a second type, that triggers a 1099 reporting requirement by the custodian. Doesn't mean it's taxable. Of course, it's rollovers, which is a code G. And we'll talk about the codes a little bit here later. I think that would have triggered it because if I understand it right, Chris, you said the earnings left the 401k and went into the traditional IRA.
Yeah, the post-tax portion, they have a mixture. For those of you listening, we've talked about how some of these work and that if you do an after-tax contribution to your 401k, which some 401ks allow, not all of them do, but they'll take non-deductible contributions, we call them, that can that amount, the part that went in, can end up being transferred over to a Roth IRA without additional tax consequences. Because it's already after-tax money. It just happened to hit the 401k first, and then you ended up moving it to the Roth IRA, still an after-tax situation with the Roth. But if that money was sitting in there for a while and there were earnings on it, the earnings can't move over to the Roth IRA tax-free. You're either going to have to convert those and have a taxable event on the earnings, or the earnings can be split off and moved to a traditional deductible IRA situation where you are going to have to pay tax on that. So it's the earnings on the original non-deductible contribution that are still subject to tax and can't make it. So in their scenario, they're not paying the tax on the earnings. They're splitting it into two pieces. The contribution goes tax-free over to the Roth. The earnings are going no tax on the transfer, but eventually taxed when it comes out of the traditional IRA. The earnings are going to the traditional IRA instead of the Roth, so there's no tax consequences for that entire transfer over by splitting it into the two pieces. That's what they're describing. And they used to do this in-house with Vanguard when the 401k and the IRAs were there. And Vanguard, even though it was in-house, gave them a 1099 every year they did this. But for whatever reason, Prudential didn't. So they've got two things going on. They have some money going to a Roth from the 401k and the earnings, a smaller piece, presumably, moving over to the traditional IRA. So one would think in this case, they'd get a couple of 1099Rs because they wouldn't explain that whole situation on one 1099R. They'd be getting two of those, I believe.
It sounds like at least there would be two because they generally don't combine activities or transfers within one 1099R. They want to keep those separate. They want there's only one code that can really go with each one.
Right. Yeah. And I've seen those codes. There's all these different codes to explain what the transaction was, and there's not really any place on the form for them to say, you know, X amount is this code and Y amount is that code and that sort of thing. There's just one box for the dollar amount, and then the code applies to it. So makes sense now that we chat about it why you'd get more than one. But I agree with Bob. I can't imagine a reason why Prudential wouldn't be required to send you a 1099-R. And at first I would say maybe it got lost in the mail, but this person went on to say they checked online and there isn't a downloadable version either, which would imply there actually isn't one. But I think there should be. So a phone call to Prudential, I think, is in order to check on this.
I would start with them. And that's what the IRS wants you to do. They want you to start with the custodian. Mm-hmm. Call them first, you know, explain the situation, talk about how it was done before, you know, and see what they say. Because ideally you want them to... unless they convince you otherwise, you know, you want them to agree to, yes, you should have gotten the 1099-R, or yes, it got lost, or we understand and agree with you and have them issue the 1099-R. Mm-hmm. Even though we're past the January 31st date where it should have been issued, because that's going to be the best case for you to get it properly reported on your return. And if in this situation or in any other situation where you cannot work that through and you really feel like and your tax professional say, yes, you should be receiving a 1099-R and you don't, the last step that you can do is you can file a form 4852. And that's an IRS form, and it's a substitute form. It's actually the same form you would use if you had a W-2 issue. So if you had an employer that gave you an incorrect W-2 or no W-2, and you couldn't fix that with the employer, you would use the same form. So it's like half the form is for the W-2 fix and half the form is for the 1099-R fix.
That's interesting to know. A lot of people end up in that. They'll have a small employer that went out of business and nobody can find the bookkeeper or anything, and the W-2s didn't come out. So this happens more often than not. So the 4852 form is going to help them in that case, or the missing 1099 form. So hopefully you have the dollar amounts, and do you essentially just fill it out for the company that should have done it? Is that what happens?
You do. You fill it out. You know, it looks different than a 1099-R, but basically the boxes align with a 1099-R. And again, this would be either for a missing 1099-R or one that you feel is incorrect. And so you fill this out with your amounts. And because the IRS would prefer that this is not the solution, like this is the only thing left option, they'll allow this to happen. But they want to know, you know, basically, how did you come up with the amounts? So there's a box you have to explain that. And I would think that would just come from your records, or, you know, maybe you have a broker that's able to help you with that, because you do want these accurately. And then they also want to know what efforts you went through to either obtain the W-2 or the 1099-R or the correct version. So you have to explain you reached out multiple times and either, like Chris was saying, like small business out of business, or the custodian just wouldn't cooperate, or whatever the issue might be. And then you attach this form to your 1040 and you send it in. And then that'll be accepted. Now, the risk for doing that is if it finally gets straightened out and the 1099-R amounts are different than what you reported. In that case, the only thing you can do is amend your tax return. And, you know, whether that's up or down, that would be, you know, that would be the only step to fix that. So it really is kind of a last resort.
But that's a good point, because there sometimes you just don't get these for whatever reason, and you call to work it out, and they just never perform on this. They don't either agree with you, or they say they're going to do it, but it never actually happens. And there is a deadline, obviously, the April 15th deadline, to get this thing figured out. So the form 4852 is the backup. Even if it's wrong, right? So this is missing or wrong, same form.
Yes.
And just be prepared to explain what's going on there in the provided box. Clearly, the computer is not going to judge this, so this is going to eventually hit someone's eyes, and they're going to make some sort of judgment on there. But make sure you keep all your records. Whenever there's something out of the ordinary, you're going to want to keep those in case it ever gets questioned, which right. is, I think the chances are fairly high. You might need to provide some additional information on these. But in this case, one would think, I think it's pretty obvious once they call Prudential that Prudential will agree they should have gotten one. So most likely, just a late issued 1099 will happen, and there's still plenty of time before April 15th for that to get resolved and for them to get you the new 1099 in this particular case. But it's good to know that form exists. If Prudential just never does it, your best kind of to protect yourself and you do all the right things, even if Prudential may not be. And I don't know if they are or not, so I'm certainly not throwing Prudential under the bus for any reason here, and we're just going by the facts that are here. There might be some other reason they didn't that we're not aware of, but that form 4852, keep that in mind as a last resort in getting this stuff reported. Is there anything else happening with 1099? I have an unrelated question I'm going to ask you that you mentioned a second ago brought a question, but I want to finish up this topic before I ask it.
Sure. So let me see. We had, just a little bit of detail on the forms. I'll just drill down a little bit into some of the reporting of the forms, of the 1099-R. Essentially, there's a box one gross distribution. That typically is that's always going to be filled out, and that's going to indicate what you received in cash or what was deemed to have been received as a benefit. And then box 2A is the taxable amount. So that's even more important, because that's going to indicate to you or your tax preparer how much of that box one might be subject to tax. And if they're not sure, and there's a lot of reasons that the issuer of these 1099 are, they're not sure. They know how much they sent you, but they don't know how much of it's taxed. And so if they're not sure, 2B is a box. Taxable amount not determined. And they'll check that box.
Oh.
And if that box is checked, then 2A generally is left blank. There, and that's up for you or you're prepared to figure out the tax part of that. Box four is important. That's federal withholdings. So that's dollars withheld from the distribution, either as a requirement from the custodian or it's something that you requested. Mm-hmm. And that's a form W-4P. So if you want certain withholdings coming out of your retirement pay, avoid paying quarterlies, avoid coming short, you can request certain amounts of withholdings, and you do that by sending the custodian the form W-4P filled out.
Got it. Because a lot of those, like your 401k, if you get a distribution out of there, they have to send 20% withholding over to the IRS. But if you want more than that, the W-4P would allow you to define. Unfortunately, you can't define less than that because the IRS says you have to do the 20%. But you could do more because some people want to have more, and if they don't do that, they'll under withhold their taxes, if you will. So
exactly, you know, especially folks that are retired were without a W-2, which is an easy way to get withholdings in. This is another easy way to get withholdings in if you're trying to cover other sources of income, rental income, investment income. That's not subject to withholdings. And if you want to not have to worry about quarterlies, if you run short, you know, you're subject to underpayment penalties. Uh-huh. And so you can plan that through yourself or with your tax professional and say, really, I need, 30% withholding to cover this other income I have. Uh-huh. And that just makes it a little easier.
Yeah, that actually reminds me of that little trick that Jim and I have talked about, where if you get to the end of the year and you're worried that you haven't withheld enough and you're going to get penalized for under withholding, you can take a distribution from your retirement account and tell them to withhold 100% of it. And that, even though it happens maybe in December, in the very final quarter, that will be considered to have been withheld throughout the year. And you can avoid then the penalties for not doing your quarterly estimated tax payments. It's kind of a weird loophole, if you will, that you can do. And I would consider it a last resort. You get to the end of the year and realize you should have been sending in these estimated tax payments and you didn't, and you want to avoid the penalty. That's a trick of doing it. Just send it out of all the amount that you want to withhold. Send it as a 100% withholding distribution from one of your retirement accounts, and problem solved.
It does work, and yeah, it works with wages the same way. And I've always wondered when they kind of would shut that down, but it still works.
Yeah.
And they still give you the credit for each quarter. So there's a form 2210, which is the underpayment penalty form, and any withholdings out of a 1099, out of a pension reported on 1099-R or W-2 are credited quarterly.
Yeah. That's bizarre to me, too, that they let that go on. But, anyway, other boxes. We're going to talk about the codes, I think, at some point.
Yeah, a few more codes just to kind of go over. Basis, that's box five. That's an important one. That is your basis in your retirement account. And that could be either non-deductible contributions that you've made, but more commonly, it's your Roth contributions that you've made. And so, as you know, with Roth plans, you're allowed to withdraw that money tax-free. You can always withdraw your contributions, and after 5 years, you can withdraw your earnings. So if there's a basis report in a box five, automatically box 11 is filled out, and that indicates the first year of your designated Roth contribution.
Oh.
So that lets everybody know if you're at that 5 year and over requirement.
Right.
Box six is NUA, which I think you guys, you and Jim talked about
that. Not a lot, but we have done a show in the past. It's been long enough. It might be time for another NUA, Net Unrealized Appreciation show. It does apply to a handful of people. Not an awful lot of people run into this, but it is complicated but beneficial if handled properly. So I don't want to go down that rabbit hole describing it more than that on this show. But yes, we've talked about it and probably are due to talk about it again. So those of you interested in NUA, stay tuned. I'd say in the next few months, we'll probably do an NUA show.
That's good. I just mentioned that for Jim because he's big on that right now. So
yeah, we've run into a few people lately that have NUA issues. So it's kind of bubbled to the top of the list of things we think about recently when we get that. So
exactly.
But that kind of reminds us we haven't talked about it on the podcast recently that I know of. So
we have that there. And then the code section is 7, box 7. And there are a lot of codes. I mean, I looked them up again this morning, Chris, and there was more than I've never even seen some of them. So I won't go through all of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't realize there was that many. I thought there was only maybe six or so, but there's a bunch of.
Well, they ran out of one digit numbers, so now they got letters to. I think they're almost into the end of the alphabet with letters too.
Oh my gosh! Okay. So yeah, let's not do all those.
So we can go. I mean, one by one. I mean. But just a few of the bigger ones, you know, one and two are early distributions. So those you kind of have to watch out for because what they're saying is. Well, one especially is an early distribution with no known exception, which means unless you meet a few different criteria, you're going to be subject to that 10% penalty. Mm-hmm. So typically, if you withdraw traditional for either 401k or traditional IRAs before age 59.5, and it's your account, it's not an inherited account or anything like that, you're going to be subject likely to that 10% penalty.
Right. And that only means if they code it that just means the custodian is not aware of an exception, but there might be. You may very well have an exception, but it's going to be on you to handle that part. They don't know about it, so they're not going to claim, they're not going to step up and tell the IRS that there's an exception. They just don't know about it, but there may very well be one. So don't panic if it's coded that way, even though you did it in such a way that you have an exception.
Right, exactly. And then that's up to you. It's a separate form on your 1040. I believe it's a 5329 where you're allowed to designate your exception in, you know, for example, medical expenses that exceed 7.5% of your AGI. If you're taking money out early to pay for medical expenses, that's one exception in that you can report that way, and that would save you the 10% penalty.
Yeah. So there's a variety of other exceptions we talked about. The first-time home purchase. There's a few others.
$10,000 for that. Yeah. Three is disability. Four is death. That's a fairly common one when you inherit an IRA from, you know, your parents or even your spouse if you don't assume the IRA is your own, or from a sibling, and you start you're required to take out distributions, and that recently has just changed. But either way, you're required to take out distributions, and that'll come out code 4. The good news about code 4 is if you're under 59.5, there is no 10% penalty. Code 7 is normal. So that's just a normal. If you see a 7, that's coming out typically just as you're withdrawing funds during your retirement.
Okay. So that should be the most common one people see if they're not doing anything strange. If they're just taking money out to live on in retirement after 59.5, they're going to get 7.
They're
going to
get 7. Yeah. That's kind of like the smiley face code. You know, all is good.
All is good. Okay.
B is Roth. G is another common one. That's the rollover one. That's similar to our question that we were talking about from our listener was probably those should be Gs. They show up on your return. If you look at your return, you'd see it showed up on the left-hand side. But on the right-hand side where it's taxable, it's a zero. It's going to show up as zero. Mm-hmm. So I'm not even sure what they do with that information, but they're apparently tracking money moving between different accounts. L is the loaned. I think I talked about that earlier where somebody left their employer and they didn't repay their loan. That's an L, and that comes out taxable. And that can be subject to 10% too, based on your age. That was kind of it for the big codes. Those are the more common ones that I see in practice.
Okay. Well, if any of these transactions apply to you, you should be expecting a 1099-R, whether you are doing transactions all within the same custodian or not, which is really the answer to this letter. So this person, I'll make sure to email them directly if Jim hasn't, and tell them they should be expecting a 1099, and the fact that there isn't one online and they haven't gotten one in the mail, I would recommend, and I'm sure Jim will agree, if he hasn't already told them, they should get on the phone with Prudential and figure out what's going on there. So that way they don't have to do the form 4852 and explain themselves. It'd be much better to get the 1099 dealt with. By the way, if you ever see an error on your 1099, we said that the fallback position is the 4852, but it is much better and cleaner if you can convince the custodian or the issuer of the 1099, isn't necessarily a custodian, but the issuer of the 1099 to correct it, to point out, you point out what the issue is. Sometimes there is an error and it's just wrong. And if they can correct it, they can send you a new 1099 and revise the one that they sent over to the IRS. And I think, Bob, hopefully you'd agree, that's always preferable and cleanest if you can get them to fix it.
It is. Much cleaner. And to be honest with you, in my experience, I haven't had anybody, I don't think, not been able to resolve that. I mean, these are big companies, and they know the rules really well, and it's not like, you know, mistakes don't happen or things get missed or overlooked. But I've had some people go back, and we've been able to get those fixed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Well, I'm going to ask my one-off question because you mentioned filing an amended return, mm-hmm. which, if I remember correctly, that's a 1040X, right?
Yes.
My simple question is, and luckily for me, I've only had to do this once in my life, file an amended return. Why the heck can't I e-file an amended return? Is there a reason?
I don't know.
I had to print the thing out, find an envelope big enough to fold this monstrosity and fit it in there. What the heck? Why does that matter? Do you have any idea?
I don't think I actually know. I probably don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
Other than that their systems just aren't set up to handle that change of data. Hmm. Quite often you have a lot of attachments. And so when you prepare a 1040X, you don't send them what you already sent them. Mm-hmm. And they'll tell you that real clearly. That really messes things up. So when you do a 1040X, you fill it out, and all you're showing is what you sent in on one column and what your new set of numbers are. Mm-hmm. And then you explain what changed.
Right.
And then you only send in the attachments that changed. So, for example, if you missed reporting a 1099 INT, mm-hmm. You would attach Schedule B because that's where you're going to report the new mm-hmm. interest. You're not going to send anything else that doesn't change. So you're sending them a packet of information that's different than how they're normally used to receiving it. Mm-hmm. And I'm only thinking that's the problem. Is that it just doesn't fit in their system. Maybe that's just for now that'll come. I would have to imagine that will come.
I always heard that it was kind of a pain doing an amended return. I didn't realize that one of the reasons was that you had to send in a paper return until I actually went through it. I used software I have been doing my own taxes, and something changed. And I needed to file an amended return. I went back into the software and then I got to the end and it says, well, you got to print this out and send it in. I'm like, what? I was floored. I in this day and age, 2020, this was a couple years ago, but still it wasn't ancient history. So maybe they'll change that.
But
just so you know, if you end up having to file an amended return from now, you or your tax preparer have to send in a paper. You have to mail in the amendment, not e-file it. So,
and you know, Chris, that's still true if you're late. So let's say I, for whatever reason, haven't done my taxes for 3 years. So I go back and I'm going to do 2016, 2017, 2018.
Yeah.
If you're past the due date, you cannot file electronically.
I didn't know that. I've never tried it, but that's good to know.
So that may be somewhat tied in with the 1040X issue because you're filing after the original due date, including extensions.
I actually amended before the due date. I caught the error. Okay. I caught the issue before, and I thought, oh, I can just go in and I can do the amendment now before April 15th, and it'll all be good. I'll just essentially correct it in the software, e-file it, all's good. Yeah. Nope. Nope. I had to print it and mail it
put
in.
A stamp on
now
it.
I haven't heard back any. They didn't. They clearly accepted it, so it worked. But I felt, my gosh, am I back in the 1970s here? And behind a stamp, there's some stamps. I had to go buy stamps.
Yes, yeah. So did you? Well, did you pay or did you get a refund?
It was to get a. It was to get a refund from the original one. It was. There was a discrepancy. Well, I can tell you, my oldest daughter had filed her taxes for the very first time on her own, claimed herself.
Gotcha.
Yep. When she was our dependent. And of course, when you try to e-file that, it kicks it out immediately, says, sorry, somebody's already filed that social security number. Mm-hmm. And I went to her and I said, did you do your own taxes? Yeah. I didn't want to bug you.
Aren't you proud?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. We need to fix something.
Yeah.
So she had to amend hers.
To take hers off,
and I had to amend ours to allow it because there was some reason I had to actually send it in without her on there initially. I don't remember what it was, but it was anyway. It was a mess.
They have a first come first serve when it comes to dependents.
Yeah,
first one in gets it.
Yeah.
Then you either have to, if it's with a, sometimes with an ex-spouse, you have to negotiate that out, or in your case, you have to amend your child's daughter's return.
Yeah. Yep.
You can put direct deposit information on a 1040X. That is available, so you can get your refund direct deposited, but you still have to do a paper return.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, not to derail that particular, didn't really have anything to do with the original question, but just thought I'd see if you knew the secret reason why that was the case. So, well, thanks to this listener for sending this in. And this, we wanted to talk about this now because this is 1099 season. This is tax season that we're in. So hopefully this helps you out. You should be getting a 1099 for this activity. If you're missing one, you should reach out first and see if you can get one properly done. But remember that old form 4852. So we want to thank everybody for listening. And we'll be back next week with a brand new EDU show.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.